What's up, everybody? It's Lee. Some of you might know me as Intuition, and you're tuned into Kinda Neat. Thank you guys for tuning in again. I appreciate it. Every Wednesday, we're here. You can find us. We live on the internets, and we're happy that you found us. Follow me on Twitter, at It's Intuition. Follow my man, Ben Shim, behind the boards, making the shit sound buttery, at I Am Database, base with two S's. You can follow us as a unit on at That's Kinda Neat. We're trying to break our 500 Twitter follower barrier. Help us out. I don't tweet that much. I won't bug your timeline. You'll just know when the new episodes are out. So go ahead and press that follow button. You can follow us on Facebook as well, which is the most carefree way to like something. You just press that like button and you will probably never see a post from us because you probably have 25,000 friends on Facebook or something. And all of them are posting about their woes and their parking tickets and the government shutdown and other such things. You can find us on youtube.com/thatskindaneat, where you're going to see a video of our guest today, Mike Eagle, performing. I believe the song is called Degrassi Picture Day, and it's one of my favorite songs. I'm horrible with song titles, but it's like literally one of my favorite songs of his. I fucking can't speak highly enough about the song. And you can find everything wrapped up in a pretty package on kindaneat.net. Oh, yeah. So the other day, we tried to go to Low End Theory last week. Me and Jonathan, dumbfounded. We went and had dinner, and because he lives right down the street, so we had dinner at this place called Gabby's, and then we were going to go to Low End Theory, and then right as we start to leave, he's checking his Twitter and sees a tweet from Flying Lotus that says, well, it looks like the show is canceled. Sorry, guys. And we're like, what the fuck? And then we start seeing other tweets pouring in talking about like, yo, there's a riot at Low End Theory. Like, shit's going crazy. People are on top of cars. The riot police are out and like the SWAT team is out and the police have shields and shit. And we start seeing pictures of like helicopters and stuff. And we had just barely gotten on the freeway and we're like, oh, fuck. Well, we might as well go anyway and just see what all the hullabaloo is about. So we went there and we got there right in time to see like all the police just clearing everything out. And it was crazy as fuck. There was like three helicopters. It looked like something out of Grand Theft Auto or something. It was really crazy. But yeah, so that night we were like, oh, well, this is a bust, but what are you going to do? We went to Cha Cha Lounge after, me, No Can, and Dumb. And it was nice to be around, you know, I always kick it with those guys individually now, but we've known each other for a long time and we rarely like kick it as a group anymore. And so it was cool to be out with them. And then all of a sudden, you know, James was like, I need to do something next Sunday for Daylight at the Echoplex. And we just got to talking and we're like, well, fuck it. Why don't we just do like kind of a almost reunion show? Cause Dumb, Mike, No Can, and myself toured together in 2010. It's a tour that we kind of refer to now lovingly as the Miraculous Rap Forest Tour. Somehow when we were driving through like the woods of Washington or Oregon, we started like freestyling about squirrels rapping in the woods and shit. It was like we were trying to be as nerdy as we possibly could. And someone said, you know, we're in the Miraculous Rap Forest. And then that became like a freestyle hook. And we look lovingly back on that tour. And this is the first show that we're going to have played together since we all toured together back then. And so I think it'll be good. Like, it's cool because since then in 2010, we've all kind of gone our like individual routes, but still remained tied to one another through connections and mutual camaraderie and respect. By the time this podcast comes out, the show will have already taken place. And if you came, I thank you. That's what she said. Take that out, Ben. Or leave it. I don't give a fuck. Anyways, yeah, so if you came, thank you. We appreciate it. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to the show. And I was really stoked to have Mike on the show today. Mike is Open Mike Eagle. He's one of my favorite friend rappers, meaning like he's a dude that I know in real life and we kick it occasionally. He also lives down the street, so I don't see him as much as I probably should. But he is one of the busiest men in indie rap. He works so hard and, you know, puts out just a lot of amazing music. He's put out an album every year since 2010. He's put out like, I think, 5 or 6 EPs and all of them are really good. He's my friend that like I download all his music that he puts out and I keep it on my iTunes. I don't end up deleting it. It stays on there and I listen to him You know, Mike is also somebody who, he's such a well-spoken and interesting dude that he gets invited onto a shit ton of podcasts. So he does Shots Fired with No Can and Jeff Weiss a lot. He's like basically their third co-host almost. He's on just about every other episode, Keep It 100. So you can hear him on there a lot. He also has done What the Fuck with Marc Maron, which is kind of like, I unabashedly admit that I stole his format for this. I look up to Marc Maron and respect him quite a bit, and I think he's a great interviewer. And so he was on Marc Maron, which was awesome to hear him on there. And so going into this podcast, I was somewhat intimidated about like, how do I fucking interview Mike in an informed way without just doing my standard fare of like, oh, what were you like as a kid and what were you like in high school and what happened then? Like, it, rather than going through a linear history, we kind of just start off shooting the shit about like what's going right and what's going wrong in our careers. And I thought it was pretty interesting. He's got some really cool ideas. And we talk about, you know, the gatekeepers and the patrollers of hip, like who decides what is hip and such. And, you know, Mike and I are essentially the same age, and it's easy for dudes like us who have been doing it for as long as we have to kind of be jaded about it. And perhaps we are a little bit, but at the same time, we still look at this shit lovingly and we still put our hearts into it. And it was a good conversation, and I liked where it went. And I hope that you guys have a good time listening to it. So without further ado, I'm going to get into the conversation with Mike Eagle, and make sure you guys check out MikeEagle.net and check out his music. If you haven't heard his music, he's somebody who I've been pushing for the longest. Like, he's so good and so funny and so clever in his music, and melodic, a good singer, all that stuff. I can't say enough kind words. And you know, also to keep it 100, he has essentially helped me create the blueprint of what is Kinda Neat now, because back when we were doing the Knocksteady thing, he was the first ever podcast that I did. So this has come full circle. He's the first ever podcast interview that I did when we used to call it Knocksteady Fridays rather than Knocksteady Live. At the time, we didn't think of making video content for the performances back then on Knocksteady Live. It hadn't fully developed into what it became. So one week we were short on content. I was like, you know what? Mike never, we never put out a video for Mike, and he was our first podcast. Why don't we have him come in? He's got this one song that is so amazing live. It's probably even better than it is on his actual record. Like, why don't we just have him come in here and perform that as a one take? So it's like, it'll be 20 minutes of work and we'll get this great video. And then we did that, and it like skyrocketed it, and it became this phenomenon. And I was like, whoa, we need to like do all of our videos this way. And that became our new blueprint, and that then became what is Kinda Neat now. So all praise is due to Mike. Rant finished. Let's get into the conversation. Here is Mike Eagle. You're nervous? You're making me nervous.
No. I'm not like...
You got your shades on and a tie on. I feel like very... I feel very intimidated by someone that I've known for fucking 7 years or 8 years now. I feel very intimidated because you're like a podcast pro now.
No, I'm not.
You do more podcasts than I do.
I've only done like three five or something.
You do
like
the
that.
Important ones.
I did WTF and I did Shots Fired, and those two are awesome.
You're like
and
the
Baron Bonds is really dope.
You're like the co-host of Shots Fired at
this
point. I
am third chair. Yeah. I'm not afraid to tell anybody. I'm third chair of Shots Fired.
Totally. It's like, oh, wait. We have a random guest. Let's get Mike in here too.
Yeah. I'm down with that. I love it. Did you hear the Eric Andre one?
I didn't. I don't.
Oh, Lord.
No Shots Fired, but I don't really listen to Shots Fired like
I can
that.
Dig it. I don't, you know, I've only listened to yours once, and it's not that I don't want to.
No, I know.
I just don't, you know, it's hard. It's hard to.
It is hard to balance so much stuff. And plus, like, you know, you're part of all this, and like, you know all these people already, or most of them. So it's
But
like,
that's the interesting thing, too, is that the one that I did listen to was you and Blackhead, and I thought that was great because it's like two guys I know talking. And
yeah,
that was really awesome.
That was a fun one for me. Because
like, I wouldn't listen to you with most people that I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't.
No, I don't know what you mean. Please explain.
I wouldn't, like, well, serious. Like, you know, you have a lot of guests on that I'm just not too
interested in.
I guess interested. Yeah. Interested makes it sound like kind of condescending, but, like, it's not that I have anything against them. It's just not, I wouldn't choose my time listening to them talk. Because I don't really,
right.
I'm not intrigued.
Well, because you have your own,
way.
You probably have your own means and methods of finding out about new artists that you are interested in. Whereas, you know, some people use this as, this is their, some people's information
what
source.
Is it like meeting these people, though? Is it?
It's
is
cool,
it,
man.
Are any of them a jerk? And you don't have to say who, but are any of them a jerk? Like, you ever had a long conversation with somebody who was a jerk in
here? I think you're the 35th guest.
That's a lot.
And I think that there's been maybe one or two people that were like kind of jerkish, but even they were pretty nice.
Okay.
But like the type where like, you know, you see him again after and they don't remember you.
See, that's bullshit.
I don't like that.
See, that's that, you know, honestly, and I thought about this a lot. That was like probably after, like, okay, I think about the WTF thing a lot. Mm-hmm. And it was hard. Like, it was hard driving up there. Like, mm-hmm. It was hard. Like, you know, I'm like, I don't know what this is about to be. I really don't even know why this dude is going to let me up here and talk. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it was a lot of mental pressure or whatever. But then, like, you have an hour and a half conversation with somebody. And then, like, afterwards, you feel like you kind of know them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that's the thing. It's like, after I do these, I really, like, some of these podcasts get really fucking deep and intimate. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, whoa, we just, like, bonded. Like, I almost cried with you. Yeah. And a couple of them, it's literally been, like, I got choked up. You know?
I believe it.
And then, so to ever have a conversation like that, and then the next time you see them at the club, they're like, I'm like, hey, what's up? And they're like,
Yeah, see?
That's some bullshit. Weak, dude. That's some bullshit. Weak.
But I just imagine, like, somebody like Marion, I'm guessing it would be starting that way with you, too. I mean, you start to feel bonded, I would assume.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, you start to feel like these are people that are,
yeah,
like you're kind of in their life or something now, you know what I mean? After talking to them,
it's a very concentrated conversation,
yeah.
You get a lot out of an hour that you wouldn't get in normal life.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Because it's very rare that you actually sit down and talk to someone for an hour.
Absolutely.
Like, think about how often you even talk to anybody on the phone these days.
I don't.
Like,
I hate talking on the
phone.
You
know what I'm saying?
It's the worst thing in the world.
Yes.
It's a punishment to me.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a very, like, it's a very intense boot camp getting to know somebody. But I have, you know, I have my formulas. I have the shit that I like to ask about.
That's good.
Because, you know, I think I like to learn about people's life in a certain linear way.
Are you learning anything about success from this? Like,
yes,
absolutely.
Well, first and foremost, this is not your interview to interview me.
I might,
no,
though.
I'm just kidding.
Might,
that's fine.
Though.
I'm down. What have I learned about success? I've learned that the people that are really doing it here, the only fucking theme in their life is hard work.
Right.
That's it. And I mean, like, I know, talking to you, you're one of the hardest workers that I know.
I work hard as hell.
You work hard as fuck. And it's really starting to pay off. And the right people are starting to notice you, in my opinion. And I've been saying this for a long time. Like,
dude, I feel like I'm knocking my head against the wall a lot. And it's starting to bug me a lot.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
Explain.
I just, you know, to me, I'm starting to have a real understanding of platforms.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of how music gets released.
Yeah.
And how high of a platform it's launched off of. And I feel like, for all the hard work that I'm doing, it would pay off a lot more if I were able to launch my music off of a platform that was higher. That if I was able to put out music with entities that have more reach.
And that's, you know what confuses me, is because you put out so much quality music. Like, I'm not sitting here trying to blow smoke up Mike's ass to the listeners.
But
there's
actually 5 feet between us, guys, just so you know.
There is. But what I'm saying is, like, you are one of my few friends whose music remains on my iPod, and who, like,
when it
comes on, I don't fast forward it if it comes on shuffle. Like, I really dig Mike's shit, and
that's,
you put out
nice,
so
dude.
Much.
Thank
you're
you.
So prolific. So what I'm wondering is, like, what have you been learning about? Like, why isn't the higher platform fucking with you? Because I don't understand it.
Okay. The general reason, it seems to be, is that every record label is losing money right now. All of them. Like, all of them, from the majors to the big indies, all the way down to, like, everybody we know. If they're paying any money for, like, physical manufacturing and, like, paying a lot for marketing,
mm-hmm.
they're just plain losing money left and right. And with that climate, nobody is really jumping at taking a chance on anyone. And at this point, I'm still a chance because I don't have big numbers. You know what I mean? Like, I have accolades. I have acclaim. I have, you know, a bunch of great reviews, a bunch of, like...
Well, you have friends in high places that love your shit.
That's true, too.
Journalists love you.
Some of them do. Some of them hate me.
Journalists
love me.
Love you.
I don't... You know what? There are some that hate me, and there are some that love me.
Okay.
And that's fine. Like,
yeah.
That's cool. Like, that's...
And that's better... To be polarizing with journalists is better than not having journalists pay attention to you at all, which
is, you know,
my case.
And honestly, I used to think that journalists were a big deal, but they're not.
They're not.
You know what I mean? Because this is what I've come to find out, too, is that, like...
Journalists just want to be friends with artists.
Hey, but this is the thing. No matter how much a journalist likes you, all of them are trying to get better positions with bigger, usually online entities or print entities. And what they don't want to do is jeopardize their relationship by trying to put on somebody
that doesn't have the views or whatever.
Exactly. Who's not going to reward in page views or reward. You know what I mean?
But I guess what I don't understand is there are people that have similar metrics and similar like views or whatever on YouTube as you, and who probably don't make as good of music as you, but who still like big publicity houses are fucking with them. You know what I mean? Like, why aren't, I'm just so confused. Like, why aren't the curators at these publicity houses that are like hip and edgy?
You mean like the PR places?
Yeah, PR.
Well, that's money. That's just straight up money. Like, I could.
But there are, I mean, there honestly, are artists that are on those that can't be making money.
Well, they're paying money is what I'm saying, regardless of if they're making it or not. Yeah. They're not. These PR, these people aren't servicing them for free. I would refuse to believe that, mm-hmm. that these people would be spending their credibility on artists for free.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't believe that personally, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's a money thing. I mean, that's a price of entry thing.
And like booking agents, dude, you fucking book all your own tours. Like, why aren't, like, you're out here proving your worth. Like, I don't understand why booking agents.
It's all numbers, dude. Like, if I had a bigger, demonstrable fan base, none of that shit would be an issue.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's just like, I have to think about how to generate that.
Do you feel the fan base is catching up?
I see increases, but I don't see the acceleration that I want to see 3 albums in,
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean? That's what I
like
to see.
But like in the last 3 years, you put out 3 albums and probably like 5 EPs, right?
Something like that.
It's like, it's so crazy. Like, does it get frustrating for you?
Yeah, I'm frustrated right now. I sit here frustrated. And that's not to say I'm not happy.
Yeah.
Cause I'm definitely better off than I was 6 months ago.
Absolutely.
My business situation is definitely improving, and 2014 should be great, but I would expect, or I think I expect it to be further along than I am.
Where do you want to be?
Reality of it. I feel like I should have a booking agent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I have a manager now, which is like really helpful. And we're trying to put the pieces together. I feel like I should have an awesome record deal with somebody. Like
yeah.
An awesome one. I feel like people still get awesome record deals, and I should get an awesome record deal.
What kind of record deal? Like with what kind of company? A major?
With a big indie.
A big indie.
A big indie. I want to be with a big indie.
Like which ones do you?
Like Sub Pop, like 4AD, Matador, Anti, like, you know, one of the bigger, well-established.
XL.
Yeah. Like, you know, one of them, a Warp or some damn body. Like, you know, like that's who I want to be with.
Any of those guys reach out?
No, they don't. I don't think they do that. And I've reached towards some of them and, you know, have gotten not very much in the way of response.
Yeah.
It's just not my situation isn't endearing me to those people just yet.
Talk to me about like what is the difference between like who are the gatekeepers? Like who are these people that decide somebody like, for example, like somebody whose music I really do like King Krewel, like. Explain to me your theories about the gatekeepers and why the gatekeepers you don't think are maybe opening the doors for people like us.
Well, okay. One way that I know now, looking back, that I've definitely, as much as it kind of helped me, it shot me in the foot or held me back some, is that we come from this kind of Project Blow DIY aesthetic thing, which is helpful in the sense that it gives you a good understanding of how the business kind of works. But, there's a certain sense of overexposure that happens.
Yeah.
Like, I did a lot of touring before I even had an album out, which is kind of a good idea and kind of not a good idea. You know, I've had...
On one hand, it helps you get your hours up and learn your stage show.
Exactly. So, yeah, you know, and yeah, so, right, I'm tour tight.
But on the other hand, you're not out there selling the merch that you should be selling.
It's not even the merch. Yeah. It's, what's that damn thing called? Polestar? You know what I mean? Like, I probably have some abysmal shit up there just because I've done some tours that haven't been good every night.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And then, like, I know there are some people who pay attention to shit like that.
Uh-huh.
You know, I know there are some people who pay attention to how many times. Like, we were talking earlier before the show started about internet overexposure and its effect on shows.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think it affects shows that much, but I think it affects how hip an artist is viewed as.
Absolutely.
How fresh an
artist,
you know, and I gotta, you know, I guess in 3 albums, Siegel put out an album a year since 2010. I didn't put out one this year, but there is this thing. I was even, you know, I did an interview with Jay from Filler Flavor, and it came out today.
Yeah, I just read that.
Yeah, and I was saying, like, you know, I can definitely tell from Filler. Like, when I used to post something in there, it used to be, like, exciting, you know what I mean, and fresh, and get people to come in, and people would check my thread all the time and see what was up. And it's only kind of just a few, like, I have a niche market there now, you know what I mean, a few people who check with what I do. But it's not the same the interest level isn't the same. And I think it's because a lot of people have heard something maybe they didn't like or whatever, but they've just decided that they can write it off. Like, they already know what that is.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. It's that kind of thing. Somebody once told James, and James and I had this conversation, you know, it's like maybe too many people know you, or not enough people know you, but like, too many people know you. You know what I'm saying? Meaning that, like, you're in this middle ground. And I'm not saying you. I'm talking the hypothetical you, like all of us. Uh-huh. It's like we have enough people that know who we are that a lot of people have a fucking preconceived notion, but not enough people know us to where it's like critical mass.
Yeah. And I think it's just I think there's a lot of hip chasing that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And,
yeah,
and I think that and what I say all is to say, I think DIY, as good as it is, it can shoot your hip in the face. You know what I mean? It can fuck your hip up.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I think
you got to get that Bo Jackson hip replacement.
There you go. You know, and that's possible.
The longer that you've been doing it without blowing up, the less hip you get. That's just
in
like
a sense,
reality.
Yeah, and that so that in a sense that has to be matched with you building an organic fan base, so where it doesn't matter if you're hip or not, because you got your people that are going to keep you going.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so, that's the like. I don't think I've concentrated enough on doing that. Like, I've done it through touring enough. Like, I have pockets of people all over the place.
Yeah.
But,
that was the start of a rhyme. Alliteration.
Not, you know, the like you said, the critical mass thing, you know.
So here's my thing. Subconsciously or consciously, I kind of disappeared for, like, the last while. Like, I stopped playing shows, and I, like, stopped putting out excessive amounts of – or not that I ever put out excessive amounts of music, but I stopped, like – I just kind of try to disappear for a while and not make myself as available. Do you ever think about disappearing for a while?
Nope. I don't really have any interest in that, only because, like I said, there's the DIY thing and my own personal momentum has, you know, it has engendered me some things that I can't deny. Like,
yeah,
you know
absolutely.
What I mean? That, like, you know, I do get promoters hitting me up. Yo, you know, next time you tour, I got X amount of money for you here, and it's a good show, and it's a there are things that I have to do to keep my personal machine going, and it has gotten better. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely. I watch my friends and how they're doing, and like I notice you are having a noticeable momentum shift right now.
Yeah,
to me,
it's definitely increasing. But I think the point of where I'm at now is like I have to kind of. You know, do the work smart thing with the work hard thing, you know
right.
what I mean? And try to like just figure out what the best possible combination of moves is so that I'm not wasting a lot of energy.
What do you think what do you think are some of the moves that you need to improve upon?
I think I have to invest a lot more energy creatively in videos.
I would agree. To be blunt, I agree.
I mean, I think that's one of few platforms that's available that you can that people can take advantage of on their own.
Yeah.
And you can be in complete control of that gives results.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, part of the other thing that, you know, from that DIY mindset is that we tend to concentrate on albums, which is important for a lot of aspects of the industry. But in terms of just increasing fan base, I've seen that the people who invest an increasing amount of energy in videos, they seem to actually get that return.
That's what made a huge difference in my shit in the last year and a half, was like stopping worrying about getting an album out and just having the shit on YouTube. I found that YouTube followers are really fucking loyal fans, man. They're really loyal, and they like come out and they support and they fucking spend money. They rip your songs off YouTube, but they still will spend money on other shit.
Right.
Which is dope, you know? Yeah, I completely agree. How do you feel about like the album? Do you think it's a dying art form?
No. You know, I think 40 minutes of good listening from you as an artistic statement still has a lot of merit.
I agree.
You know what I mean? And so, I don't think it's dying. I think we all have to be a little bit more flexible in our thinking and understanding now that a lot of people are going to consume songs
one
individually. But I mean, you know, a lot of people are going to give you that 40 minutes when your album drops, you know,
mm-hmm. Totally.
And, you know, from somebody who has released a handful of albums and a handful of EPs, I do see that a lot of entities treat an album differently. You know, when you give them that 40 minutes, there's a little bit more reverence that goes along with it. People spend more time listening to it, spend more time writing about it, spend more time telling other people about it.
It's an easier method to pass along to friends as well.
Yeah, I guess maybe. I guess they just get, you know, as you've invested more in it, they invest more in it, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have like a favorite album of yours?
Like all time?
Yeah, sure. No, of yours.
Like, oh, of mine.
Of yours. Is there one of your babies that is your favorite progeny?
I would say that I have the best relationship now with the Natural Causes album. That's the one I have the best I wouldn't say that's the best one, but that's the one I have the best relationship with. That's the one that I don't cringe when I put it on. I can kind of just vibe with it the most.
What do you cringe when you put on?
The first one, it's called Unapologetic Rap.
Really?
I like it a lot, but I have been, just like any artist does over the course of their career, they kind of figure out recording.
Yeah.
And I listen back to that album and I'm like, man, I did a lot of things recording wise that were, it was just a document of me trying to figure things out.
Yeah.
So there's like, I think there's a lot of disparate levels of quality between songs. And I'm, it's cool. And that's, of course, is expected. And I still love it. And it still was my first foray into everything, So I have a certain affection for it. But certain things on it when I hear it's like, wish I could do that over.
Yeah. I always feel like that's a sign of artistic growth when you hate your old shit. I say that all the time. But like when you hate your old shit, it just means you're getting better at what you do, obviously. What do you think about the fetishism of youth in the culture right now?
Fetishism of youth. I don't even know if I agree that it's there. What would you give me? Give me an example.
Well, I think that like nowadays on blogs and stuff, it's always like, 17-year-old rapper doing this, or like, so and so. It's like if they're young, age is in the headline.
Okay, and I think that's,
and there's a quest for the youngest and the best.
Right, but I think even more than that, there's a fetish for newism.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, if there's a young kid who's like a fucking prodigy, then yeah, that gets headlines. But I think newism is the fetish more than youth. I don't look a lot.
Yeah.
I really don't look a lot. So it's hard for me to tell. Honestly.
Yeah.
You could be exactly right. I can't say that I have spent a lot of time looking at new stuff. So it's hard to say.
Which is probably why you write so many goddamn songs. I need to take that advice.
Yeah, maybe that helps you write smarter songs that you feel like will do better.
I don't know.
Because I just write whatever comes to me, and sometimes it's a bad idea.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's too much in my own world.
Yeah.
You know?
I talk about Gladwell a lot on this podcast, probably annoyingly so. Have you ever read any?
I started reading, not The Tipping Point, the one, what's the one?
Outliers?
No, what's the other one?
Blink, What the Dog Saw.
Blink.
Yeah.
I started reading Blink.
Blink is his worst one. Put it down and just start out.
Well, that's the thing. It's funny because Blink talks about Thin Slice, and I felt like I thin sliced the book.
Yeah.
And then I thin sliced all the rest of his
books.
The only part
that really stuck out to me in Blink was the part about the police brutality. I thought that was really interesting.
Man.
But anyways.
I mean, I come from psychology, so a lot of that stuff is kind of already ingrained in my academia.
What I was going to talk about in Outliers, he talks about like there are some people that are prodigious youths who peak very early on and spend the rest of their respective careers trying to reach what they did when they were 18. But then somewhere where I like feel as though I relate to you is that I think both of us keep getting better with age.
Mm.
And like, I heard a lot of your early stuff and I was like, I'm going to be honest. Like when we were like 24, 25, when we met, I was like, oh, Mike's got something, but you got to work on it.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden it was like, I don't know, like around 2009, I was like, holy shit, Mike fucking figured it out. You know what I mean? And ever since then, I feel like you keep figuring it out a little more with every project.
Try to.
Yeah. So tell me about that. Like, do you, there's something to be said for people who can be in their 30s and still be getting better. Do you agree with that?
I feel like you're going to get better at everything that you continue to do though, right? I don't see how you can get worse.
I guess Nas never made another Illmatic.
Yeah, but is,
how about this? Big Daddy Kane is only a year older than Jay-Z.
That's amazing.
Right? So think about this. Big Daddy Kane made some amazing music as a very young man. Jay-Z never got put on until Big Daddy Kane's career was starting to fizzle. And now Jay-Z is still fucking Jay-Z, 44 years old or something, and like still kind of a leader of like the quote unquote new school, while Big Daddy Kane is considered like a rap dinosaur.
Well, I mean, that's an exposure issue right there. You're talking about somebody with the majority of his work came out in like the late 80s and the early 90s and shit. So like, that contributes to his perception as a dinosaur. And honestly, I don't know is Big Daddy Kane bad now? Have we heard anything?
No, Big Daddy Kane's still dope.
Is he doper? Because there's, okay, like, I look at guys like Kool G Rap got doper.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Slick Rick got doper. I think Pasta News got doper.
Yeah, I agree.
This is what I think it is. I think, if I listen to Kane, right, his early stuff, I think in the situation he was in the climate that his albums came out in, I think it was easier for him not to think about his music as craft. I think it was easier for him to just kind of just make stuff and put it out and just kind of be okay because of his position. And he was good, you know, he could certainly rap his ass off, and he was a writer too. But I think as rap has become, as it's developed, it's gotten to be more about craft and the craft of rapping, the craft of writing a song, the craft of delivery. And that's why when you look at the guys who are at the top now, like, you can't have an MC Hammer now. You know what I mean? Like, because you can't be a top rapper if you can't really rap that well. Like, it's just, it's harder to have that. I mean, who do you think? who would you say?
I mean, I would say that, like, modern day MC Hammers. Are like the one-off internet hits, you know what I mean? Like,
but see,
this was, is no shots because I fuck with these songs.
But that's the thing, though. You're talking about one-hit wonders now. That's not what I'm talking about. Yeah. I'm talking about MC Hammer was a guy who had like 2-3 albums in a row go platinum, like multi-times platinum. You know what I mean? He wasn't a one-hit wonder at all.
He had two. He had the first one and then Too Legit to Quit, and I think after that was Pumps in a Bump, and that didn't go anywhere.
I feel like there's one in between there,
maybe.
Too. Even Pumps in a Bump did well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's still...
Shout out to his banana hammock in the video. He was killing it.
Biker shorts.
He was killing it. No, it wasn't even biker shorts. It was a straight fucking Speedo.
I thought he had a
It was a Speedo.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it was. Right. That was on the box. They wouldn't play that on, they wouldn't play that on MTV because there was too much man meat.
Yeah.
Do you feel comfortable in knowing that there's something to be said with getting put on later in life?
I don't really know what that means. What does getting put on mean? What does getting put on
I don't
on
know.
Mean?
Like, what I'm saying is good things are going to come to you. I foresee that. I can feel it. I have a – it's on the nose, but I have a slight intuition that good things are going to come to you. And so what I'm saying is, like, the things that are happening now in your tide shift that you feel and that I – or that I'm – that I hope you feel, that I see happening.
Yeah,
do you think you would have been able to handle that as a 23-year-old?
Yes. Honestly, I had more energy for it then. It's one thing that's funny when I do listen to my first album that I really like. I feel very strongly that at that time, I honestly thought I was going to change the world. I really honestly in my heart felt like I was going to do some shit that was I remember I tweeted or I think I put it on Facebook or something. I put it on like last year. I was saying I felt like when I made my first record that that I was going to put it out and that like Chuck Klosterman was going to be writing about me. You know what I mean? I thought I was going to be that important and had that much force culturally.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I think, you know, I could use some of that now. You know what
was
I mean?
Was it anticlimactic?
It wasn't so much anticlimactic as it was learning. It's the rubber meeting the road of what I do and what the world is. And a lot of that ended up getting reflected in the Natural Causes record. I had some people say to me that they were surprised that I got so like into like racial and race concepts, because when I made my art rap record that I thought, you know, that I thought was going to change the world, most of the feedback that I got from people encountering me was that like people were surprised I was black. They didn't know if they were ready for a rapper who spoke well, like all this like real like racist shit, you know, that people didn't realize was race, like the institutional racism thing. And so I ended up reflecting a lot of that in my next record, like a lot of the frustration based on that. It's because, oh, I found like, you know, even if despite the fact that my album wasn't perfect, you know what I mean, that I had this whole other obstacle of racial perception to deal with before anything like I wanted to happen could happen. You know what I mean? Encountering that, you know?
Yeah. Listening to you on Marin and listening to Bus on The Champs, two podcasts that I actually consistently listen to. So any thing that I say right now that might sound negative, I think both of those podcasts are excellent what they do and I love them. But I felt like Marin was so fucking out of his element with you because he couldn't grasp the fact that there were like black rappers that don't talk about, you know, the same thing that all fucking white people think rappers talk about,
right?
And like bitches, hoes, gold chains and guns, whatever. Like that kept seeming to be this thing that he couldn't get past. You know what I mean?
He was struggling with it.
Yeah.
He was struggling with his own perception of
but
what
that's,
it, you know,
that's what amazes me is that like, that is really a representation of like what people actually think.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's
yeah.
Crazy.
No, I mean, you know, I tour a lot, dude. You'd be fucking surprised the type of shit that people say or do, or, you know, this is still, you know, it's America. This is a white country.
Do you ever get people saying like, you're my favorite black rapper?
Yeah, I mean, it's not that it happens like super overtly that much anymore, but you know, you can clearly see. I mean, even if somebody says some shit like, I don't usually like rap, but I like you. A lot of times there's some shit that's under
that. That's innately racist.
Yeah, it's a lot of times that's what they're saying is that like.
I get that a ton, obviously, yeah. As a white person, and I fucking hate it.
Yeah.
I hate it because I'm like, you're not listening to, I mean, you're just not hearing it then, you know what I mean?
Right.
It surprised me even with like Bus on the Champs. Like these are two dudes who are supposedly. I mean,
who are those two dudes? I haven't heard the Champs.
Moshe Kasher. He was.
Oh God, that's a stand-up dude, right?
Yeah, co-creator of Chappelle's Show. He's kind of a new stand-up, but yeah. He was an old TV writer. And then I don't know, Moshe Kasher and Neil Brennan is the Dave Chappelle.
Does Neil Brennan say the N-word on that show?
He occasionally.
Why?
Well, that's the thing is. I don't want to sit and like fucking talk any shit, but like I said, you know, he's the co-creator of the Chappelle Show and he talks about it and he's, you know, he says, I have enough black friends. Where,
did
like,
he say when Bus Driver was on?
Maybe. I can't remember. I mean, they, you know, all of their guests, every episode, their guest is black and the N-bomb gets dropped occasionally.
Oh my God. I couldn't imagine, dude.
Yeah.
I couldn't fucking imagine. Like that shit would make my skin crawl.
Yeah. Like, I'm glad that I have friends like you and James that like really keep people in check about that because like
it's hard in LA though. It's easier for me.
There are so many people that inappropriately drop the N-bomb that don't need to be doing that.
Ugh. Yeah. I could go on forever, but you know, like I said, I'm from Chicago, dude. Like it just wasn't, that's not some shit that happened. You know what I mean? Like if it wasn't fucking colloquial, it wasn't fucking a nice thing to say, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So like it's still like, it will always affect me like that. Like it's funny. Yeah. Like, I do understand that, like, there's a certain enlightenment that can take place and everybody can let go of the word eventually and it could become
reclaim its meaning or what have you, is what people say.
Yeah, which is, to me, is ridiculous. But I don't think it could ever happen until after I die because I'm going to be the last one. I'll be the last dude that still gets mad. Like, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it'll have to be after me, you know?
Did you grow up early on recognizing, like, racial inequality?
Yeah, I mean, you know,
do you have any specific memories that you're like, oh wait, this is fucking racism?
I mean, I just grew up in the hood and then, you know, and then I ended up going to an elementary school that was mostly white. And then, you know, there was just a big world of difference. And then, you know, people just used to do shit all the time. It was just like fucking racist. Like, I'll never forget, man. This one time I was in Vegas traveling with my dad. My dad used to travel the country. Had like a sales team, so like this aloe vera shit. And they used to travel all around the country, and we're in like some convention in Vegas. Ended up hanging around with this white boy, probably around the same age. It was probably like 10, maybe. And it was the kind of thing where adults are in meetings all day, and me and him just run around playing arcade games and hide and seek all through the damn hotel and swimming and shit. And something happened and he just stopped and called me a nigger. Like, wow. You know what I mean? Like, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks because he said it because he knew it would hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And how he knew that at that age, I had no idea.
It's a hot button.
Yeah. You know what I mean? But it's like, damn, like that was probably my first time that like, I was like, oh my God, like somebody actually like.
And that was at what age? 7 or 8?
I would say like 10. Oh, 9, 10. 10 years old, something like that.
That's crazy. Yeah. If you were raised in the hood, as you said, what was it that got you into like the white elementary school? How did your parents choose that school? Or like, was there a busing
situation?
You know, it's funny, dude.
Yeah, because I didn't even want to go. I had a hard time with like transferring and shit. My grandparents who raised me always wanted me to transfer to like better school. I didn't understand at the time, but the school I was in going to that was in like the middle of the projects was like a bad school.
Yeah.
And even the teachers would tell them in conferences that I should be in a better school. You know what I mean? It's just like.
It was recognized that you were like a talented kid very early
on. Yeah, that I caught on, you know, smart. I was, you know, always knew all the answers and shit.
Early,
you know,
reader,
I mean?
Probably.
Yeah, all of that type shit. Yeah. All of that type shit. So yeah, like they ended up having me take this test to go to the school that was like across town.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So I started taking a bus. They had like a magnet program, so they bused kids from the south side up to the north side to go to the school.
And looking back on that, are you happy that happened?
Yes. I mean, I still have friends from then.
Yeah.
And a lot of the music that I like still to this day, you know, I experienced or came into contact with at that time. I'm not sure how much of it depended on me being at that school. But you know what? That school was a better school.
Yeah.
Like, without a doubt. Like, that school, you know, was teaching young kids how to think critically, you know, and like doing logic puzzles and, you know, just, you know, it set me up to be a thinker. So, you know, and I probably wouldn't have gotten that at. Now, one thing I did get at that school in the projects was a very strong racial identity. We used to have like the Eyes on the Prize. You ever seen Eyes on the Prize?
No.
It's like this documentary series that it was just like a civil rights documentary series. And I remember, like, I think in all black schools they used to show it, you know. And then you know, Black History Month was like a real thing where like every day they would bring in this new thing to show us, you know what I mean? And it was, you know, in the '80s there was still a strong sense from our teachers of that kind of pride. And so they instilled that in us, you know what I mean? So I had to trade some of that for sure. But, you know, what I gained at this other school was, like I said, some critical thinking. They had like philosophy classes for fifth graders. Wow. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
It was great for a developing brain, you know, developing mind.
Yeah, this question might be like way off base, but it's something that just struck me while you're saying it. Like, I'm sure you felt some like weird racial tension going to the white school, but then when you would get bused back home, back into the hood, did you feel any tension from that too? Where kids were like, oh, you fucking, you know, like, oh, you go to a good school and shit?
Nah.
No, nothing like that?
Yeah, because in my mind, it was, you know, like, it wasn't like something that really came up. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like, we used to play, the kids in our building, we all used to play, we all went to different schools anyway.
Oh,
like,
okay.
So it wasn't like a thing. Like
yeah.
That.
What were you guys into early on?
Like the kids?
Yeah, entertainment-wise. Or like just like what did you do for fun?
Played Nintendo.
Yeah.
And then we played in the playground outside the building. That was my interaction with neighborhood kids, was Nintendo and the playground. And that yeah. was it.
What games were you fucking with?
Shit, everything on Nintendo. Fucking Battletoads.
Oh, yeah.
Blaster, whatever.
Master,
you know,
Blaster?
Yeah. Or, well, you know, everything. Everything on 8-bit Nintendo, dude.
Yeah, like, I fucking loved Master Blaster.
Fucking that Clash of Demon Head, goddammit. Low G Man. You ever heard of that shit?
What about Summer Games? Or wait, what? No, California Games.
California Games.
Ooh, the Hacky
yeah.
Sack, though.
Yeah, you ever fuck with Power Pad, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that
but
shit, the track and field.
Yeah,
and
but the Power Pad, we would just get down.
Yeah, exactly.
Just pound that shit like
for
it was conga, like bongo drums.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. What kind of music did you get into early on?
My mom introduced me to rap music.
Yeah.
But one thing I can always say is that I think growing up in the 80s, being in environments where I got sat in front of a TV a lot.
Yeah, same.
Like, my mom was in all kind of weird shit. My dad traveled a lot. So, I mean, hotel rooms, even at home, even, you know, my grandparents, they both worked when I was living with them. So, you know, sitting in front of TV a lot. Like,
yeah.
And in the 80s, music videos are developing, and that's becoming a big thing. And so I always was exposed to all kinds of different music. Mm-hmm. Always. I can remember, like, I think the earliest video I remember seeing was Simply Red's I Keep Holding On.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like, damn, it's a great song. You know, I'm like fucking like five
yeah.
and some shit. You know what I mean?
I always say the first video that I remember, and it probably has led so much to my fucking pervert personality, is California Girls by David Lee Roth.
Oh, it's a great video.
Woo!
That was a great
the bikinis in that though.
It was great. That's a great song too.
It is. Yeah. You can't fuck with a Beach Boys cover.
I like David Lee Roth.
Yeah. He's
Just a Gigolo. That was my shit.
Diamond
dude.
Dave.
Yo.
You know. Rappers could learn a lot from Diamond Dave.
I think rappers have learned too much from Diamond Dave. Already.
That. Yeah, yeah. So
yeah. I mean, like, so, you know, rap is in my environment, R&B is in my environment. My mom listened to Anita Baker constantly and Sade. My grandparents listened to fucking doo-wop and 70s singer songwriter shit.
Did you ever go through like a militant Public Enemy phase?
No, I never did. I was always super attracted to the native tongues thing.
Yeah.
So, like, I did have, you know, my dashiki and my African medallion. But that was mostly because my family was, you know, really had a black consciousness, especially when I was with my dad. Like, we always had that kind of, like, black consciousness thing. So, but I was always attracted to them because they wore that kind of shit. And then the music was real jazzy. And I was always really attracted to, like, jazzier samples more than, like, the funk and the straight ahead, like, the big beat shit.
Yeah, you know? Same. I remember when I heard Award Tour for the first time.
Yeah,
that made
me,
like, I was probably, like, in junior high. And that made me want to, like, go back and listen to the earlier shit. And,
I heard that shit on the fucking radio, dude. Like, this,
yeah, I saw the video.
Yeah, Chicago, like, dance station, B96 played it. I was like, what this is great. What is this? This is amazing.
And I don't know, like, this might sound weird, but you know what really attracted me to Award Tour was in the video. I thought Pasanus looked so fucking alternative because he had that full beard with the shaved head. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa, that dude looks smart as fuck. Like, I want to go listen to his music. You know what I'm saying?
I love 93, man, for all of the native tongues groups. I love 93. I love the Moon Mind State, Midnight Marauders. JB's with the Remedy is like my favorite Jungle Brothers record. Like, I really think that's when their shit peaked.
That's great.
The 93 shit.
Word. I heard on Marin you talk about like your mom being in some trouble. Is that anything that you ever delve into?
It was weird, dude. Like, we were involved in Hebrew Israelite sect when I was very, very young.
Yeah. Those are like the guys that like stand on the street and yell at people.
Dressed like He-Man and shit. Yeah. Like that's the ones out here. We were in, I can't remember if this was in Illinois or if it was in Texas. I feel like it was in Chicago.
Oh, you were living in Texas for a while?
Yeah, but.
Where at?
Corpus Christi.
Okay.
But that had to do more with my mom. Like, my mom ended up, I think from that, maybe not, maybe it was even not related to that, but they were into some ill shit too, the Hebrew Israelites. I remember there being some weird shit with that. Weird legal shit with that.
Like, is it kind of culty or something?
No, it was kind of like, I think, some money laundering shit going on with that.
Yeah.
I never really got too deep into it, but it was some shadiness. And then she ended up being with a dude. I think they got married. I can't remember. But he was like a big-time drug dealer.
Oh, okay.
Big-time dude. And she was like helping him out. I think all she might have been doing was like answering the phone for him or some shit. But like one of the things were like, and I got, you know, I got arrested with her, you know. Well, I didn't get arrested, but I was with her when she got arrested.
So you had to get taken in and everything?
I think I just had to get picked up. I think I got picked up on the scene.
Wow. Was it like people barged in the door or something?
No, we were in a car chase.
Get the fuck out. How old are you?
I had to be. It was before I started first grade.
Wow, dude.
Because, yeah, she was in jail when I was in first grade.
And do you remember it?
Yeah.
Well, what is that like as a fucking 4 or 5 year old?
I mean, she got arrested. She got taken away. I spent a lot of time with my grandparents anyway because my mom was just kind of like, I mean, she's a smart lady. She's together now. It's like all this shit's cool. But she was a kind of young, crazy 80s person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like she had like MC Hammer kind of haircut with lines in the side and shit. Like,
yeah.
She was into fashion. Like she actually made clothes for like one of R. Kelly's earliest videos.
Get out.
Yeah. She was like super artistic, but she was kind of partying and kind of, you know, all this other shit.
Right.
So, you know, I don't even remember. I know she got taken away and like then the next thing I knew, basically, I was out of Texas and I was living back with my grandparents in Chicago.
Oh, so the car chase was in Texas.
I think the car chase, if I remember correctly, the car chase was in Texas.
That's crazy.
That was in Corpus Christi.
So that, but was dad in Chicago the whole time?
No, dad has been in LA pretty much my entire life. Yeah.
How did your folks meet?
I think that company that he worked for, daughter, I think she used to work for it too. And it was kind of just like some ships passing the night shit. Like they were never married.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it was just a thing.
Yeah.
So you stayed with mom's side of the family more as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Are you close to dad's side now?
Yeah, I'd always been close to both parents and both parents' families.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the things that that strikes me is, I don't know if it's maybe like telling or symbolic, but like you seem like a strong family man now. You got a great wife, got a kid. Do you feel like being from a kind of like rocky home situation as a kid has made you try to like keep it?
Okay.
Keep it?
I think there were rocky aspects to it, but I think like my grandparents were super stable.
They were stable.
Super stable. Yeah. And when I think back of all the kids that were in my building, even like this was a building that was basically kind of for, not for retired people, but there was a lot of old retired people in the building.
Yeah.
And all of the kids lived with their grandparents. Like the fucking crack shit, man, that shit hit the black community hard. And like my parents' generation got fucking decimated. You know what I mean? And so there's a lot of like absentee, you know, like I had an uncle that died from AIDS.
Yeah, we were that perfect
heroin
age
user.
Where
like,
it's
like it was the crack thing and the heroin thing.
Our parents would have been like at the perfect age to use drugs.
Exactly.
To use
and they
crack
were coming from
out.
The 70s, where to my understanding, it was used to be really easy to try drugs and put them down
because
everything was kind of mild.
And coke was glamorous.
Coke was around and coke was everywhere. People did coke. But then like when it got boiled down to crack forms, like
all
opium
of a sudden
got boiled down to heroin form, all of a sudden shit just got you hooked instantly and changed your life. So like, everybody in that generation, like, you know, my parents' generation, uncles and aunts on both sides of the family that got fucked up off of drugs and disappeared, basically, before they actually physically died.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, that part was unstable, but my grandparents and a lot of other people's grandparents
held it down. Yeah.
Held it down. Held me down. Like, a lot of my values came from my grandparents.
Right.
You know?
Right. How did you and Tiff meet?
We met at a conference for trans African nationalism at UCLA.
What does that mean?
Like people who wanted to like be involved in pro African politics or pro diaspora politics, but that were out here.
That's still big words.
like
break it down to the layman.
Okay, you know what the diaspora is?
No, I've always pronounced it diaspora, so I probably don't.
It's basically like the combined lineage of like African people from the continent to wherever they got put.
Okay.
Like that combined thing is called the diaspora. So basically people who still wanted to people who still think that way and want to be plugged into that kind of struggle.
Yeah.
We were at, it was a conference.
So it's like, it's more to like learn about your heritage and where your roots originate?
Not to learn about it as much as to continue to be involved in the goings on of African people everywhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's like probably a strong political phase of your life.
Yeah, I would say coming out of college, especially, I was like, you know, I was in college. I was definitely that dude. Like, that was the dude who hosted all the poetry readings and went to all of the every student group meeting and president of this and secretary of that. Like, definitely, I was like an organizer kind of dude.
Yeah. You know?
I'm much more cynical now.
You were idealistic then.
Yeah, and optimistic too.
Yeah.
And I'm not as optimistic now. Like, I still believe. Like, basically, I think the basic problem right now, where I used to think it would, the problems were more racial, I think the problems now in terms of human society are more collectivist versus individualist.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, people who think communally and people who just go for self.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
So, like, and being that I think that's the main issue, I have a harder time understanding what can be done about it, just because, especially the American machine, it just makes rugged individualists and it kind of perpetuates, and it's just really difficult for me to imagine what it's going to take to get people to stop thinking like that.
Mm-hmm. You know? When you met your wife, instant click or what?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we met, we talked, and then we went to this after party thing that was at Chaos Network.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And so you took her to the Bloat for your first date?
Well, basically, I didn't even know it was going to be there. You know what I mean? We just happened to go, and that's where it was. And yeah, that was it. The rest was history, you know?
How long till you guys are married?
We met in late 04. We got married in June of 06.
That's so crazy. I have this shameful fucking story that I don't know if you know, but the first time I ever met Tiffany, I had no idea that you were dating anyone.
Oh, boy.
And I was out some show, some weird fucking show, but I know, like, Dumb was there and Lyra Flip was there, and I know you were there, and you guys might have been performing, but it was like at an auditorium type thing.
Oh, was it that church? In Koreatown?
Nah, it wasn't a church in Koreatown. It was something college-y. It might have been a rap battle. I think it was a rap battle. That's what it was.
In Irvine, that one?
Yeah, it was in Irvine. Okay. I was living in Santa Barbara still, so like Irvine made no sense to me. And then I think we all went to like Dave and Buster's afterwards or something.
Something.
Yeah, huh? But anyways, I was standing with James and Anastasia, and up walks this pretty girl, and she says something to Stasia, and I said something like smart-assy to try and hit on her. And then Stasia's like, dude, shut up, that's Mike's girlfriend. And I said, oh, shit, I'm so sorry. I had no idea. And so ever since then, I've always been trying to like backpedal over, like quietly in the back of my head, like backpedal, like, I'm so sorry, Tiffany. Like,
it's been like 7 years.
Yeah,
back
7 years ago, because I still feel like an
fantastic
asshole for that.
Fantastic. You were backpedaled smooth off of the planet at this point. You can come back. It's okay.
I just still feel like an asshole. No, but I love you guys' family dynamic. And her fucking Facebook post about Asa, I always tell you this, they crack me up. Yeah, your son has so much character.
He's insane. He's a lunatic, man.
What was it like when you guys found out you had baby on board?
She planned it, yo. She planned it.
Yeah.
You guys had it planned out? Yeah, because she needed to do it in a certain way to be able to like work it in with work.
Yeah.
With her semester, because, you know, she's a professor and shit.
Yeah.
So like planned it to like conceive this date, to have it this date so she could take this semester off and to do the next semester working from home.
Yeah.
And it just worked out.
And it
perfect.
Worked?
Worked perfect.
Man, strong seeds. You know? Like, most people aren't that lucky.
Strong eggs, too.
Yeah, most people aren't that lucky. Like, oh, yeah, that's great. What does she teach?
Sociology.
Yeah. That seems like a good fit, because I'm sure you have a lot of theories on sociology as well.
We fight on that.
Yeah.
We fight on that, because I'm psychology and she's sociology, and those two disciplines are at odds constantly. So we both try to describe everything as I describe everything as psychological. She describes everything as sociological, and of course the truth is somewhere in the middle. But
yeah, absolutely.
It was like we ride for our disciplines.
Yeah. You guys think you're gonna work on any more?
No.
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 Ace is it?
Yeah, that's it.
What's it like watching your son grow up?
It's amazing. It's, you know, now, I mean, he's, when he was a baby, just kind of think about him as a, you know, a tiny developing like little you, but now he's like his own small person. And that's the interesting part now,
yeah,
is to see like his own personality traits, you know, and just his own particular leanings.
Are they a combination of the two of you often?
I don't know. The jury's still out on a lot of it.
Really?
Because, you know, just fucking four-year-olds are crazy, man. Crazy. Like,
the imagination,
they got these language skills.
Yeah.
But then they got these weird wills and desires, yeah, you know what yeah. I mean? So they can say the most eloquent, insane shit all yeah. the time. Like,
what I would imagine with having two smart parents, he's probably like a young gifted kid as well, which makes the outlandish shit that he says even more kind of poignant or something.
It does.
You know?
It yeah. does. He says really insane things.
A yeah, lot. It's awesome.
It is.
What do you see in her, in him?
It's hard to say. It's hard to even say what I see in me in him. I mean, he's really.
Well, he likes bus driver raps.
Well, she does too.
There you go. Oh, okay. So yeah. that could be that's a shared trait.
You know what I mean? Yeah. All three of us like bus driver. It's hard. It's really hard to quantify right now. It's
yeah.
really hard to quantify because he's, you know, he has his own relationship to a lot of stuff. You know, and we present him with these different stimuli, but like his positive or negative response, it's all right now, it seems to be him. And I think as he develops, we'll start to see a little bit more of ourselves. But right now, it's like, you know, it seems to be an independent being.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What's a day in Mike Eagle's life like when he's at home?
What day of the week we talking here?
Oh, you have your day scheduled like that?
Well, we got to say weekday versus weekend.
Let's go weekday.
Okay, weekday, Monday through Thursday is different from Friday.
How so?
Well, Monday through Thursday, wife's working, kids at school. So
You drop him off or
yes,
she does?
I drop him off, pick him up every day.
Yeah.
He's in school from like 8:30 to 4 or something like that. And so that's my work day. That's all of my creation and career maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything I have to do, I do.
Do you write better in the mornings or the afternoons?
I write better. I don't know. I just write better when I have a good idea, and it yeah. doesn't matter when it is. Sometimes I find I write better out of my house.
Yeah, same. Then what's a Friday like?
Friday, okay. He just started a new school, so he's actually going to school Fridays now. But before that, we would all be at home because she didn't work on Fridays. So
that's family day.
Chill day, yeah.
Yeah.
Chill day.
Yeah.
Now she's at home still, but he's at school, so me and her chill. You know, we end up running errands and shit too. But like,
don't chill too hard. You might end up with another AC.
No, we won't. You know, I'm about to surgically take care of that
Are
shit
you?
In a minute.
Oh, man.
Very soon.
It's such a crazy age because like I haven't started on a family yet, obviously, but a lot of my close friends have and are all considering the SNP.
Yeah, man.
And it's just such a crazy concept.
It's a crazy concept to me too, but I keep saying it over and over again to myself so it's less crazy.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's absolutely insane. It's ludicrous.
Yeah. It's so crazy.
Yeah.
I
don't want any kind of surgery around my balls ever, but it's like that's where I'm headed on purpose. Like I'm deciding for myself to go get ball surgery.
Yeah. I remember like the debacle that was my dad's.
Oh, God. I don't know if I want to hear that.
When I was a kid. Well, no, it wasn't a debacle. I just know it started a family fight or it started a parental fight as a child because like my parents, they have me and my younger brother.
Mm-hmm.
Two boys, they wanted to try one more time and see if they could get a girl. But apparently my mom was like kind of dilly dallying about like whether or not like when to do it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was kind of compulsive, I guess. And he also worked at a clinic in the Air Force. So like knew all the PAs and people that could perform the surgery. And like one day just came home and was like, hey, I got my vasectomy. Sorry.
Damn.
Yeah. And like all high on fucking Percocets or whatever they give you.
Oh, shit.
And my mom's like, what the fuck? Why did you do that? I thought we were going to try again. And he was like, oh, there's no turning back.
Well, they're
now.
Reversible now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's fucking in his 60s. He's almost 60, so I doubt they're going to reverse that.
He's done.
Yeah, yeah. But I always thought that was funny. But I'm glad that my parents didn't have a daughter because my brother and I would have had to gotten in so many more fights.
Oh, I bet.
You know?
I bet. I'm kind of, you know, I hate to be, you know, gender-centric, but I'm glad we had a boy.
Hey, you know, they say you have a boy, you only got to worry about one dick. You fucking have a daughter, you got to worry about every,
every
dick in the
dick.
World. Every dick in the world.
Oh, God. Yeah. So crude and real.
I have a feeling that life will pay me back by giving me a daughter so that I just have to be scared about her actions at all times.
Oh, God.
I don't know. So what's next for you, Mike Eagle?
Putting out a record next year. No, the Hellfire Club tape, Donor vs. Tukey. That's coming out November 5th. And then from there, it's just a fucking steady string of records, man. No Can's dropping. I'm dropping. Milo's dropping. Bus Driver's dropping. Like, we're gonna try to fucking... put a foot in next year's ass.
Try to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I read the Hip Hop DX thing of you and Milo, and they're like, it's not all black people. They've got one white MC.
No, I said that. I said. No, we put out Intuition, so we're not racist, okay? We put out Intuition.
I tweeted, like, oh, Hip Hop DX just called me white. I'm offended.
Man, it's so funny, man. Like now, like this year and like in the last year, I would say, like I've toured with people who have their shit together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Fuck! Like, you know what I mean?
I remember, and, like, you were a changed man after you went on tour with A$AP Rock. You're like, now I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that wasn't, like, even touring with Dessa, like, just did a run with Buck 65, like, and if you just see, like, oh, like, so many things have to combine for you to have a real draw.
Yeah.
You know, and when you have that draw, then now this other shit opens up, you know? But like have,
what?
Like, then the booking agent, you know, is
yeah.
immediately down.
Obviously,
if
yeah.
there's a draw.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know what I mean? You get all these different media opportunities when people know that there are eyes who will watch and ears who will listen. And,
right.
You know, like, just having people, man. People power, dude. People. I think people power is even more important than money power, really.
Yeah.
You know? It used to be, I think, that you could just kind of buy your way in. And I think you can waste a lot of money trying to buy your way in now, you know?
You know, the thing about your music is that it's geared towards such a specific person.
Ooh, yeah. That's
the thing. But here's the thing is that I think that specific person that it's geared towards, all of those people will eventually catch on to it. You know what I'm saying? And once you have the power of that niche, I think it's going to be a strong thing.
That's a conversation that I have with myself a lot, though, because what naturally comes out of me in my, you know, quote unquote, being prolific is a lot of this stuff that's just dialed into like this
very
niche,
dialed.
You know what I mean? And,
yeah.
And it's like we can rewind all of this and go back to that point, you know, about how niche it is. And that's a very important factor, too. You know what I mean? Is it like it's only every now and then where I have a bullet that's effective for a mass amount of people.
Right.
Most of my stuff is very narrowly targeted. And it's not necessarily on purpose. It's just the combined experiences, influences of my life, when I'm true to them, it makes a specific thing.
Yeah.
And it's not a mass market thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, earlier when you mentioned Filla Flava, like, to those of you who don't know, Mike and I post on this internet forum. Shout out to Filla Flava. Shout out to Jay Gloss. We've all been on that site now for nearly 10 years. Like, yeah. I signed up on February 1st of 2004. So in February, it'll be my 10-year anniversary.
I think
on that
I signed in 07.
Yeah. You were late. Yeah. yeah. It's crazy that you were a late comer and it's still 2007.
Yeah,
so long ago.
Exactly.
I think that the common theme of that website is called, it's all kind of rap adults.
Right.
We're dudes that, like, we were super into fucking underground rap in the early aughts,
mm-hmm.
and now here we are as adults, and we still like rap, and we're kind of still adjusting to like what's out there, and picking and choosing like what matches our tastes as according to what we grew up with. But the common consensus on that fucking forum is that you're pretty goddamn tight, and I think it's because like rap adults can feel your music.
Yeah.
And I think that once every fucking rap adult gets put onto that, it's going to, you know, just like similar to like Shabazz Palace's, similar to like Kaz doing that right now, or however you say that dude's name.
But you know what, though? I'll tell you something about rap adults.
Yeah.
A lot of rap adults are the ones who really, 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 really enjoy the more juvenile aspects of rap.
I could feel that.
And so like there's,
well,
and if that's what you value, you know what I mean? There's a lot of time there's no real turning you off of that. You know what I
yeah.
mean? Like, if you value hard rapping, like, that's all you want to hear is hard rapping. Like, you want to hear a guy hollering. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's not me. You know what I mean? That's,
right.
And that's, I think, you know, there's still a very large amount of the rap adult population who really likes those kind of foundational things, those kind of traditional rap things,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, and I mean, there's some rap adults that like highly grasp onto like ignorance rap type shit,
yeah,
or like
yeah.
you know the like straight turn up shit.
That's exactly what I mean.
Which is fine, but the thing is, I think there's a lot of rap adults. I'm a rap adult, but I feel like to think of myself as a well-rounded rap adult, where I do like to go out to a party and listen to Waka Flocka, but I like to come home and put on headphones and listen
yeah.
to, you know, something that is a little bit more soothing.
But you know, but there's some rap adults who turn up all day. They turn up on the way to work, they turn
yeah.
up at home, you know what
true.
I mean? Like, that's
the office space dude just
yeah
rolling.
Like, that is a real person.
Yeah, that really
I've
is.
Met that guy over and over again, you know what I mean? Like
yeah,
and that's
yeah.
the reality of the situation too, is that some people just aren't into any rap that's not
yeah
that,
yeah,
you know.
Like, the double-edged sword of it is like, people that get into you, you're going to become their favorite rapper, period.
Mm.
But it's like finding those people that where you're going to be their end all be all. It's like that niche, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But there's a balance. There's going to be a balance, because no one's ever going to be neutral about you. You know what I mean?
That's true.
And I think that's good. I think it's good to be polarizing.
I should be more polarizing, though.
You should.
I'm down to be more polarizing.
I think you should just like have go through a militant phase and fucking let's start a race war.
I want to start a class war? No. Something. I do want to start
there
some
is
kind
a,
of war.
Yeah, there should be
start a fucking awareness
there
war.
There should be a class war.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's just coming, probably. I need to learn some skills then, because I don't know how to fucking grow nothing or fucking...
Did you ever read World War Z?
No.
The movie is horrible, but the book is great because, like, all the rich people, basically, when the zombies come and they have to start society over, it's like all the rich people realize they can't do shit and they're having to, like, literally take, like, janitorial classes stuff like that because it's like they don't even know how to clean, let alone, like, you know, the people that thrive the most are, like, dudes that are, like, living in the cabins and know how to build shit. You know what I mean? Yeah, we got to get our hands dirty and learn how to build
something.
For
real. I just, you know, I've been trying to grow some plants in my house, man. It's not going well.
You got a green thumb?
Well, my mind is on it, but I leave town too much. Honestly.
Yeah. What are you trying to grow? Some fresh basil? I just love saying basil.
No, I just got these different little plants and shit. I couldn't even tell you the name. Coleus is one of them. I don't know. I'm just buying seeds, like trying to grow shit.
I thought you were going
to
be like, oh, no, just these like different little plants like OG Bubble Kush.
Shit, I should. You know what I mean?
Anyways, man, we're going to play a show together on Sunday.
Yes, we are.
This won't come out till afterwards.
No,
so,
shit.
So if you guys came to the show, hopefully you had a good time, and I thank you for tuning in. What song are you going to perform for us today, Mike?
Looks like Picture Day, man.
This is one of my favorite songs of 2013. I heard a demo of it in the studio that we're sitting in right now, and I emailed Mike or texted him and was like, yo, dude, you have to send me that song so I can listen to it in the car because I love it so much. So I'm stoked that you're performing that on here. Tell the people where they can find you online, Mr. Mike Eagle.
MikeEagle.net is my portal to everything.
I just saw your cover page today. It looks really nice.
Thank you.
Who designed that?
Young Diana from Culture Kick. You know Diana.
Yeah. Diana.
She's amazing, dude.
She did a great job.
Yeah, she takes a lot of my pictures.
Shout out to Diana for really pimping out your web page.
She looks
pretty.
She did that. She's awesome. Fuck with her for any of your graphic needs, man.
There you go. So if you go to MikeEagle.net, there's a little bar underneath that has all the social media outlets, dozens and dozens. He's on like Tumblr and Kick and LinkedIn and Black Planet and MySpace. He's everywhere. Yeah, man. Thank you for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, dude. It's been a long time coming.
It has been a long time coming. I've been trying to be patient to space it out because
no,
you're always
it.
Such a busy dude.
It makes sense, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, plus, you know, we know each other.
Yeah, so. We do know each other. So it's one of those things where I can just get, you know, like come in and let's just do it in our boxer shorts.
What? Yep.
No.
Yes. In our banana hammocks.
Pumps it up. My name is Lee. You guys might know me as Intuition, and you can follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. You can follow my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, making the shit sound buttery at
Ben!
At I Am Database.
The two of us need look no more.
Facebook.com/kindaneat. Just go like the shit. It's very low effort, and you probably won't ever see any of the posts pop up in your timeline. You can find Mike performing on youtube.com/thatskindaneat and follow us as a unit on Twitter at thatskindaneat. Everything is wrapped up in a pretty package on kindaneat.net, and this social media rant is way too long, and I'm sorry. I'm going to figure out how to make it shorter. Mike, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
This was kindaneat.
It was.